from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Within the legislative leaders, there's a desire, I don't want to speak for the governor, but within the legislative leaders, there's a desire to get a budget. Of course, it has to be an agreed to. If the conditions on one side or the other are unreasonable, then maybe an agreement falls apart. But we're certainly trying hard to get there.
We're a couple $100 million difference, and this is out of a budget that all told is about $80 billion. So, you know, we're going to have to do some cutting. We're going to have to trim some things. You have all four Coxes and the governor, different criteria. We're trying to mold all those together into something that will get 71 votes, and, you know, hopefully then the governor will sign it or we'll override him.
I want to clarify something that in our debate, we referenced the neutrality of the NRA, which was our understanding coming into today on this bill. We have been informed as of roughly 3 p.m. during the debate on this bill that the NRA is now opposed.
But NBC5 exclusive, Democratic State Representative Kelly Cassidy says she was forced to resign from her job in Sheriff Tom Dart's office.
In February, Cassidy did several interviews critical of Speaker Mike Madigan's handling of the sex harassment allegations. Days later, Madigan's Chief of Staff Tim Mapes called Cassidy's supervisor at the sheriff's office to see if she was still employed there.
That call from Mapes felt like a warning.
The Me Too movement has resulted in many coming forward to point out inappropriate behavior at the State House. Now the House Speaker Michael Madigan is one of his own members saying she faced retaliation for being outspoken. Also, we're less than a week away from the scheduled end of the spring legislative session. Can those in charge get a budget accomplished? We'll talk about that and more. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Also joining us this week on our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And in our State House Bureau, Brian Mackey, IPR reporter, who covers the State House beat for us, and Daisy Contreras, another IPR State House reporter. And good to have her back this week. Amanda Vinicky is our guest of WTTW Public TV in Chicago Tonight. Amanda, great to hear you once again.
It is great to be back with y'all.
Let me throw it to you guys down there. We're less than a week away from the scheduled end of the legislative session. Is a budget going to get done?
Well, people are optimistic, and they're certainly more optimistic than at any time, at least during the current administration, during the Rauner administration, I think. I've spoken to a number of legislators who are part of these negotiations. They seem to say they're about just a couple $100 million apart, which is Democratic State Representative Greg Harris, I think we heard at the top of the show, said, you know, in an $80 billion total spending budget, a couple $100 million is, you know, couch cushion change. You know, but there are some divisions, some things that will have to be negotiated among the legislative leaders, and we can talk about that if you want to get into details.
I'll agree with Brian that all of the legislators that I spoke with, likewise, were feeling pretty good. Not to say that everybody is on board with whatever this pending deal is. Certainly you have conservative legislators that say we don't want any sort of budget that banks on the income tax increase that uses that money because they want it rolled back. There are certainly, as Brian alluded to, questions as to whether, for example, I think the big one, if things continue to go smoothly and that $100 or a couple $100 million gap of differences is bridged between the four caucuses, what will Governor Bruce Rauner do? That is the biggest question, it seems like, at this point. So there's that. And among one of those questions, and I think where he could either be brought on board, perhaps, is, of course, Rauner wants this money for a new veterans home in Quincy. That's a major political issue for him. And that is one of the several issues that has been kicked up past the budgeteers, quote unquote, the General Assembly level and up to the governor and the four tops. And we're, that as yet appears to be still unresolved.
Yeah, and the four leaders, they actually met with Rauner twice, I think, this week, and they did not speak to media at all. So I don't know if that's kind of telling that there is some optimism. They don't want to come out and maybe publicly weigh in on something that and mess up the negotiations, perhaps.
Charlie, usually when we're hearing all this talk about budgets and we get to this close in the process, it seems as though we know a little bit more about what's in it, what they're talking about. I think Daisy's right. It seems a little more stealth this time. I'm not hearing too many leaks about what's actually in this budget or what may not be in this budget. Seems like they've kept the door pretty tightly shut.
Well, I think they have, and one of the reasons is in the past when they have a meeting and they would come out, usually it was to be critical of one another. And the fact that they're not saying anything, I think, is a good sign. And to me, who's somebody who's watched this stuff for decades, the fact that we're discussing will there be a budget or not is just so surreal. Back in my day as a reporter, there was never a question, will there be a budget? Of course there'll be a budget. We might not get there until July 1st or July 2nd, but we'll have a budget. Nobody doubted it. And the landscape has shifted dramatically. And the fact that Representative Harris alluded to wanting to get 71 votes suggests that there's maybe some thinking that whatever the governor chooses to do when we send him a budget, our intent would be to override him if he doesn't sign it.
I know there has been discussion about, I think Amanda brought up the Quincy Veterans Home and the money the governor wants, and there had been thought that maybe they would put that in a separate piece of legislation. But by putting it in the budget, in some ways you may force Rauner's hand a bit by doing that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because Illinois' governors have very broad powers with appropriation bills. An appropriation bill is literally hundreds and hundreds of pages of what are called line items, which are basically paragraphs that say you can have this much money to do this and it's coming out of this fund. The governor has the ability to go through and strike out, delete, veto any of those particular paragraphs that he chooses. He also has the ability to go in and say, I'm reducing this amount. You want $100 million for whatever? I'm willing to go 50, and he can do that. And so he's not going to me, if there's something in there he doesn't like, and again, this was back in what I would consider normal times, a governor would just line item out the stuff he didn't like.
But Amanda, that hasn't happened. The governor has not done that. Rauner has not done that before. He could have done that with budgets that were sent to him by Democrats and avoided possibly the budget impasse for, you know, a couple of years.
Sure. And that's why that is, I think, the grand outstanding question. Again, there's certainly much, or not much, but there certainly appear to be some discussions that haven't been settled. Just how much money, for example, additional will go to education? Will it be $350 million or $400 million? What is going to happen with the local government distributors fund? There are some questions. But the big one is, what will Rauner do? Because he has not exercised really that line item veto. It would perhaps be very much a political equation. Of course, he's campaigning to hold on to that office, and his campaign is all about is really a more of a campaign against House Speaker Michael Madigan and, quote, what he describes as Madigan's tax increase, and saying that he wants to roll it back partially. So will he feel like no matter what agreement gets worked up, no matter how many Republicans are on board, because the goal, according to people that are in on these talks, is to have a bipartisan deal passed, not just Democrats, as we had seen in prior years, but will the governor think it is better to veto a budget and then bank on that being overridden so he can say, I was against the tax increase, I'm against this budget that spends all this money, and yet he can govern through the end of his term, or his first term anyway, with a budget in place and without all of the harm and fallout of the impasse. That would be a bet that we don't know what he is doing. It is just one theory that a lot of people in the Capitol are talking about. What's he going
to
do?
Yeah, or on the other hand, he could sign it and then, you know, be seen as relevant to the process, at least, which is something that I think some people have said, is that he certainly wasn't relevant to the resolution of the budget fight last summer. He simply vetoed it and immediately passed it right back to the legislature conveniently so they could override him that same, you know, like within an hour or so of him vetoing it. Talking to some of the Democrats in particular who are pushing this, and the Republicans, they seem to want a real deal, as Amanda was saying. This is not last year, and in previous years, we've seen things like selling the Thompson Center, and then it's not gone anywhere. There was an S&P analyst I was speaking to earlier this week who made a joke about, you know, said this is, it's something that you would normally consider a one-time revenue source because you only get the money from it once and then it doesn't repeat. But it's been in the budget so many times in a row now that it's almost becoming a regular source of revenue for the state of Illinois. We just keep saying we're going to sell the Thompson Center every year. But what one Democrat said to me is that, look, if we can't come to an agreement and there are some divisions between the mayor of Chicago and the governor about, you know, who's going to pay for the very important L station there, or I guess it's a subway station as well at that point, and, you know, who's also going to, you know, who gets control of the zoning of that? Is it going to be the city or is it going to be the state? There have been some divisions there. And they're saying that if we can't come to some resolution of that, we're not going to put that in the budget, which does make a higher hurdle, but it actually makes this more of a real budget than what some people, you know, particularly the governor, decried as a sham budget last year.
And Charlie, nobody benefits by going into another budget impasse. Something, you know, I've heard different things talk about maybe holding off till after the election or maybe passing again, you know, the 6-month budget. That was discussed earlier in the spring, people bringing that idea up. Nobody really benefits from that. So both sides probably are trying to get something done at this point.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, particularly if you're a rank and file lawmaker of either party, you don't want to go home and say, well, we couldn't get a budget passed because we had to defer to the wishes of the House Speaker or the Governor or the Senate President. You want to go home and be able to tell your constituents, here's what I've done on your behalf in Springfield. And not having a budget, running the risk of the schools not opening in time, running the risk of not being scholarship grants for kids to go to college, running the risk of local governments not getting the money they're due. You don't want to go home and tell your constituents that because you got involved in this standoff between the Democratic leaders and the governor. That's not something that you can really run on. You can't run and say, oh, yeah, I stood up for the governor and everything that he stood for, or I really stood up for Mike Madigan. You don't want that. You want to be able to have something positive to use on the campaign trail.
Two things to keep in mind where I think this sense of optimism comes from are, number one, because of what I've kind of called the hangover of the budget impasse is still really, really felt here at the Capitol. And it's not just campaigning and going home. I think legislators are all, they were ticked, they were upset for a couple of years. Just everybody doesn't want to go through that again for their own sake as well as for that of the states. And then also, of course, you do have this income tax money to work with. So while there are some difficult decisions, really what you're presumably going to have is a budget that looks pretty darn close to the budget that we currently have. There will be areas that take shavings and such, but Illinois at this point has billions of dollars more in revenue than it did for most of that, than it did for during that impasse. And so that changes the whole equation. And then third, and I'm guessing this will be sort of an unintentional lead-in to our next topic, is that I think part of this is, of course, House Speaker Michael Madigan, I think it's not just is under pressure from his own legislators to work out a deal, as is Rauner from Republicans and such. There's that pressure from within. And in my opinion, as we perhaps talk about the Me Too movement and the speaker under scrutiny, he is advantaged by having a deal, getting it passed on time. Otherwise, he could see more trouble from within, which is where he really cares.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's switch gears. The speaker this week in the news, not for the reasons that most people might think, claims of intimidation, retaliation being made against the speaker and members of his staff. What exactly is being alleged here? Daisy, I know you were following this. What are some of the claims being made?
Yeah, State Representative Kelly Cassidy claims that she felt pressured to quit her part-time job over at the Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart's office. This is after she says she was very open and criticized House Speaker Michael Madigan about his handling of sexual harassment allegations earlier this year. Cassidy was one of the first to call for an investigation into these allegations. She says that some big Madigan supporters within the Democratic Party came to Tom Dart's office and they questioned why does Cassidy still have a job if she is against some of Tom Dart's initiatives that he supports, but she doesn't. So there's some conflict of interest.
I mean, yeah, that's the question here. And I think one of these calls was placed by the speaker's chief of staff, Tim Mapes. And anyone who's been around here, I mean, you know, if you didn't know better, you would think that Tim Mapes was the speaker sometimes from the way he sort of goes around the House floor and gives orders. And I mean, legislators get emails from him about the schedules. I mean, he has a lot of...
He runs the show. He's like the conductor during session.
He's the clerk of the House, and so the fact that the clerk schedules things isn't that surprising. I mean,
but this isn't scheduling. I mean, this
it goes beyond that. And he's the clerk of the House now, but he wasn't always. That was an additional, you know,
additional duty. He's also runs the Democratic Party for Madigan. I mean, he is Madigan's number one trusted, confident top aide. And so that he made this call when presumably he well knew that Kelly Cassidy had this job or had other ways to have done it or could have had somebody else make the call if he was sincerely wondering. Yeah, I mean, that might be something that you could see as a sign, as a hint. But
and we have not, we should say we have not heard from him, I don't
no,
think, about why he did this.
That said, there are certainly, I mean, I think that the Capitol is, there seems to be a lot of conflict here, more so than there is over the budget, but over what to think of this situation. There is, was this, you know, pressure and, quote, retaliation? Then there are those who say, well, what did she, why did she have this job in the first place? She's a legislator with a part-time public job. She is against legislation that was the top initiative for her boss in that part-time public position. There are those who are saying, wait a second, that's most surely a conflict of interest, and she shouldn't have been lobbying either way on this bill. She should have, if anything, recused herself or not taken a job with the sheriff's office to begin with.
And then she does, I mean, if you look at her official legislative biography, she does have experience, organizing programs. She worked for the National Organization for Women. She was a legislative aide for Senator John Cullerton, worked for intergovernmental affairs at Cook County State's Attorney's Office. So, I mean, she does have relevant experience here. But this is something that I think, you look in Springfield and you say, okay, somebody stepped out and was critical of House Speaker Madigan. Who's done that? So Representative Scott Drury has done that. He lost his committee chairmanships. He didn't get a little crystal clock that the speaker gave as gifts to everybody. So somebody spoke out against what the speaker was doing and they're facing some, you know, slight political consequences or political pressure. I'm shocked.
Well, I would say this though, Brian. The other things you mentioned about Drury, those are all House related things.
Matters.
This goes beyond that. So let me just say, we'll find out more maybe in the future about exactly what this job entailed or what was going on. But I am a little unclear. She said she felt pressure to resign, but did she clarify in any way why, you know? Was anybody basically saying, beyond just saying, does she still work there? I mean, what was going on there? What really, took place?
Well, so the allegations are that the state representative Bob Rita, who was carrying, and did we say what the bill was? This is about there's apparently a significant problem of inmates exposing themselves to female visitors to the jail.
To public defenders.
Public
mostly.
Defenders, yeah. So, I mean, there is, this is something that the sheriff wants to see that people who do this are put on the sex offender registry.
He's under pressure to resolve that.
Right. So because the public defenders don't want to show up at the jail to meet their clients because they're being harassed in this horrible way. Cassidy opposes that. So Bob Rita said, how is it you still allegedly said, and he has denied this, but said, she says that he called up somebody there and said, how do you still have this person working for you who is against your boss's priorities? So Cassidy, despite that news report we heard, and some people have characterized this as she was forced to resign, she chose to resign because she felt this pressure or conflict, with disagreeing with her boss's position. But, she goes beyond that to say, this is not an issue that Representative Rita would normally be involved in. And so this is just, maybe he took over this issue as a way to kind of get back at me is one of the suggestions here. I mean,
she says it's retaliation and she resigned rather than continue that. And she went public because she says she wants to expose this pattern, that this this is how it works, that it isn't direct. There is, I mean, so much to tackle here. Part of it is now there are calls for an investigation. Then the speaker said, yes, he wrote a letter asking the legislative inspector general to, yes, investigate. And yet, the point that Cassidy has made, and this is what is widely presumed to be the outcome, that Madigan's own fingerprints, if there were to be any sort of retaliation, if that is what this is, that his fingerprints wouldn't be directly on it. What? So Tim Mapes made a call. A representative made a call. He didn't ever tell them to. He says he had nothing to do with this, and he doesn't know why she would think that that is what it was about. Now there's a dispute over... Okay, so the speaker asked for an investigation. End of story. We'll see what the legislative inspector general comes up with.
There appears to be a lot of expectations. That's one of the issues.
That's one of the many issues, yes, is that, first of all, you have people that say, why the legislative inspector general needed Madigan and the other legislative leaders' approval to get that appointment. And while people appear to have utmost respect for Julie Porter, is that yet another conflict of interest? To have a legislative inspector general, what, find fault with one of the people to whom she has to thank for the job that she has? Now, Porter is just in the position temporarily, basically through the end of the year to get things wrapped up. She doesn't appear to want to stay, but there are calls for instead, no, we need an outside investigation instead. And then it does raise what in general has been done since the Me Too movement really took off and particularly had a focus here at the Capitol. What have legislators actually done to both within state government and in the private sector deal with all of the various sexual harassment issues and the very, very many loopholes with that ethics commission and the legislative inspector general's position in the first place, how very difficult it is to really nail down and, you know, find fault with a legislator for any sort of potential ethical breach.
And adding to what Amanda just said about the ethics involved with this investigation, the questions that are brought up, how does the legislative inspector general Julie Porter come up with this investigation or investigates this and not feel like she's being pressured from both sides? Some members of the Legislative Ethics Commission, specifically Republican Senator Karen McConaughey, said she wants to make sure that the legislative inspector general is not in this awkward position. Therefore, let's call for an outside investigation. And that's another issue.
And before we move on here, Charlie, I want to give you kind of last word on this. I can remember Tim Mapes, for example, when the fights were going on between Madigan and Rod Blagojevich. Tim Mapes' wife was fired by the Blagojevich administration. That became an issue. These types of things have happened in the past. Is it that uncommon to think that that basically somebody getting out of line could face some retaliation working in some type of government or political work?
Well, and it's not clear that there was any, what would you say, that Tom Dart, the Cook County Sheriff, fired her. She quit of her own accord. And her reason was she didn't want to put Dart in an awkward position. That was part of her explanation. But, yeah, if you're in a job and you go against your boss's wishes, or as was mentioned earlier, this legislation is Dart's number one priority, because the stuff that goes on in Cook County Jail is just horrendous. And I mentioned elsewhere, back in the day, what would happen is the culprits would have had the tar beaten out of them by other inmates who wouldn't stand up for that kind of behavior. But in any event, the underlying issue is also that there's a general consensus among particularly the Legislative Black Caucus, that we are not going to do any penalty enhancements this year. And so any bill that would increase penalties for any offense is not going to get through the House Judiciary Committee. And that's sort of one of the underlying issues behind all this. Yeah. So the fact that someone has that kind of subtle hint that, hey, you should be supporting what your boss is going for, that's not at all uncommon.
Brian, Sean, Brian, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I know you wanted to give Charlie the last word, but I'm going to try and sneak one more in here. I don't want to leave the impression that I'm minimizing this, right? And this is where I said earlier that this is, you know, I think if this were in any other context, if Representative Cassidy had been critical of the speech or over his handling of the budget impasse or any other number of bills, and then there were calls placed to another job she had, apparently a, you know, a political appointment type job or a contract or something like that, that I think people would say, well, you know, you cross the speaker, this is what you get. But post Harvey Weinstein revelations, post hashtag Me Too, we are in a different era now, and it's pretty stunning that anyone would do anything that could even smack of any sort of retaliation, you know, at a time when there is so much scrutiny on this issue in general and on the speaker and his political operation in particular.
And something that I am keeping my eye on is how particularly women legislators are responding to this. Over in the Senate, the Women's Caucus, so basically every female senator, signed basically a letter of public support for Cassidy. House Democrats, or House Republicans to that extent either, but really the focus there, House Democrats have not done that. And so that is something that is particularly interesting in this Me Too movement as well.
Okay. Time now for our notes from the field. Daisy, let's start with you.
Yeah, so earlier this week, the General Assembly approved legislation that would extend programs for voting in jails as detainees wait for their trials. And for those who have served time, once they come out, they would be given pamphlets or informational packets on their rights to vote. A lot of people who go through the system don't know or aren't aware that they are allowed to vote once they're out. So this is to increase voting during elections.
Okay, Brian.
Turning now to tax policy, last year's big federal tax change hit blue states because it put a $10,000 cap on the deductibility of property tax payments, for example, all state and local tax payments. Illinois is following the lead of Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, other states that have a system that relies more on property taxes, trying to pass a way that people can donate to charity and have it count, be a tax deduction, but that money would still end up going to schools sort of in lieu of property taxes. The Senate passed legislation to do that this week. Meanwhile, the IRS is saying that it's going to be casting a very skeptical eye at these sort of schemes.
Okay, Charlie.
Well, the state of Illinois is one step closer to allow farmers to grow industrial hemp. Legislation that would approve that is waiting for the House to agree with a Senate amendment that made a minor change. Hemp is a very versatile crop. There's expectations that it could be a $2 billion industry within the next couple of years. It could be used for a wide variety of things, but it's also the tamer version of marijuana. They're both the same plant, except hemp has virtually none of the active ingredient that makes marijuana so much fun to smoke.
And Amanda Vinicky.
The city council in Chicago this week gave approval. Some people have said, well, hey, rubber stamp, this was always going to happen, for the President Barack Obama Center. It is not technically a library, but a big step for actually bringing that to fruition. That said, that center still is under a whole lot of scrutiny, including a couple of lawsuits. And guess who says he's a fan of it, but not without a community benefits agreement that will be sure that neighbors in the south side of Chicago get really a slice of that pie? None other than Chance the Rapper.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Amanda Finicky. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.